Hello, universe.
This is Goals Podcast. I'm Les.
And this is Doug.
And we are genuinely out actively lifting society.
Hey, what is going on, all of those people that enjoy listening to Goals? This is your guy, Dub. And man, whoo, did we take a hiatus? We are back. It is official. This is episode number 25, and we are so excited to be here. We are going to have a whole lot more fun. We're going to have a whole lot more episodes where we have a lot of different topics, a lot of things that we're expanding on, and we are even having some stuff that might be controversial, a little tiptoe, a little edgy, but you know what? There's no better way or no better couple or people to come through and talk about it than us, because this is the safe space where we can talk about just about darn near anything and everybody can come to the table and feel comfortable and we can enjoy it and make it a fun episode. Anyway, we are here. We love you guys. We thank you for all tuning in and sticking with us throughout all the different things. We are going to be coming up with some different topics that we're going to chat about on the show. And we will be getting you guys some updates as to what we have been doing. But before all of that, we have an archive episode that we've been hanging on to that we thought was really fantastic. It's coming up on a year since we started the podcast in the first place, and we have had a lot of fun hanging with this gentleman that we were able to bring out. He's a class act. I can't even tell you any more about it. Let's just hop over to the episode, but most importantly, keep coming back for more. Every other week, we're going to be dropping a show on Tuesday, and it's just going to be a whole lot of fun. But let's get into the episode, guys. We just wanted to welcome everybody back to Goals, and we are going to continue to bring the fun. Let's go. Hey, this is Goals Podcast, and this is your host, Dub.
And Les.
And we are genuinely out actively lifting society, and today we have a special guest, the man, the myth, the legend, the voice behind Hard Parking Podcast, Mr. Jay Finning. So happy to have you here.
Glad to be here. Awesome to be here.
Yeah, awesome, man. We've talked back and forth. We've had a chance to hop on your podcast, Hard Parking Podcast. There's so many topics that you cover on there, and just the community that you do have on social media is pretty awesome. There's so many things that you do. So we wanted to bring you on and highlight you on our show. But also with that, we also wanted to find out about Baby Jay, little Jay, before he got brought into the podcasting community and all of that. So just wanted to have you on and share your story, Mac. So I think you're pretty awesome. Where you want to start?
I haven't really talked too much about the beginning, so I guess we could start there.
That'd be great.
Born in Savannah, Georgia. And before people say, oh, do you know so-and-so and so-and-so? No, I don't. Was relocated from Savannah, went to a foster home, and that's kind of where we, you know, kind of all gelled after listening to your first couple episodes. It's like, hey, those are my people. We have similar journeys. You know, it's like we all took a right and then we kind of went different directions, but we all still took a right. And most people are on left, so they'd have no idea what we go through. But I was adopted when I was four. I think I was four, maybe I was five. But I'm the only one that looks like me from my birth family. So, you know, I was the only one that had any pigment to my skin. You know, everybody else was like just pure Vietnamese. And so I'm black and Vietnamese, which I didn't know until I finally did the ancestry thing when I turned 40. So whole life, never really sure what I was.
Wow.
So that was like when you're being raised, everyone's like, what are you? And that's not really a favorite question of mine. You know, what are you? But was adopted, have Caucasian parents. I have a Korean brother who is a little, he's got Asperger's just a little bit. So he's fully functional, but there's still some things, you know, that aren't quite there. So, you know, we're raised in Texas in Garland. So that dynamic, you know, you have a mixed kid, myself, two Caucasian parents from the north, and, you know, a full Korean brother. And so that's how we were raised. So that came with a lot of trials, tribulations, being a child, not really knowing a lot, being angry a lot. I think you guys could probably identify with that.
Yeah.
Not knowing where you're from, people make fun of you sometimes. And you don't really know what's really imagined. And sometimes we misremember the past. So I'm not entirely sure. Maybe I was I don't know if I was a physically abused kid before the adoption, but my adoptive mother says my birth mother was sick. And so we all know sick could be any number of things. But I do have a life book actually down the hall. And in the life book, it's got my birth photo. It's got photos of the original family. It's got some photos of the foster family that I was with for just under a year, I think. And so it gives me something to kind of look for one day. But going through my whole life, it's kind of like there's this giant hole and you're still not quite sure. But I think I've found ways to grow from that. You know, I've never had any formal, I haven't gone to any formal therapy, but I just think that I've kind of learned to deal with and accept things in life. And fortunately, I would say that while I've always kind of felt like a loner, I've always had really good friends too. Because I didn't have a big family growing up. You know, growing up in Garland, Texas, our closest relative was 1,200 miles away. And so my friends became my family in a sense. You know, so for me, most of my really close friends, I'm still good friends with today. And I could probably count, I would go over 5 if I were to count people that I can absolutely depend on today. And I think that's a blessing because a lot of people can't say that. You know, that's basically it. You know, I moved from Texas to Michigan, went to art school, flunked out of art school. It just wasn't good timing. It's not that I didn't have any, you know, creative talents or skills. And then, you know, once I finally got married to my wife now, we've been married, this is our 17th year, I decided to go back to school because she already had 2 kids. So I have no natural children, but I'm old enough to have the children. So that's the thing. And as you guys know, I have a grandson. So that's my life in 10 minutes or less. If you have follow-up questions for any of that, I can give them.
I have to go back. So you did not find out what your like ethnic background was till you did Ancestry at 40 years old? Your whole life you were getting what are you and your, what do you tell people? Like, I don't know. Like, first of all, I hate that question. I hate when people ask that, but.
You know, so a couple things. So in all those photos, there was never the birth father. Mm-hmm. And so when I asked, I said, well, who's the birth father? And my mother told me nobody knew but your biological mother, and she didn't tell anybody. So again, take from that, you know, so the guess is every time maybe she looked at me, she saw someone else and wasn't very excited about it. You know, in one instance, you could say, well, how could anyone do that? But people are people. Right. People are people. And that's one of the things that I've learned, you know, throughout the course of my life is people are people. So I'm very accepting of things. That doesn't mean I am okay with them. But sometimes you understand. So what would I tell people? I didn't really know. You know, and the funny thing is, well, when I had hair, I had like, do you guys remember John Cicada?
Yeah.
I had kind of a John Cicada style hair, you know, kind of wavy. So you weren't really sure. There weren't a lot of people who looked like me at the time. And the day I graduated high school, I had my friend come over and we shaved my hair off, all of it. And it's interesting, you know, from that moment, people saw me as African-American. Mm-hmm. And they never saw me as anything else, with the exception of there was a few people who knew that I was mixed with something. And the crazy thing is, some of my Asian friends, they look at you and they go, you're mixed with Asian, aren't you? Mm-hmm. Or are you Vietnamese? So it's crazy, right? But I formed a stronger bond with that half because I never knew the other half. And as soon as, going back to high school, as soon as somebody found out I was at least Asian, I was like immediately family.
Nice.
So you guys can identify with this. When you grow up, even though you have a family, you still don't really know where you are and where you fit. So when people accept you for who you are, man, that's gold.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So you talked about a life book. A lot of people don't know exactly what a life book is. So can you kind of explain what a life book is?
Well, a life book to me, because that's just what it's called, what I've known, and it could be, I could be calling it something different. It's this really cool binder that somebody made for me. And it just kind of steps through you know, when you open it up, it's got my name, my birth name, which my Vietnamese name is Duck, D-U-C. And I actually have a friend here that always calls me Duck. That's all he calls me. He's like, Duck, Duck, you know. But it has all my stats, you know, time I was born. Well, I don't know if I had the time, but it definitely had the size, everything, all that kind of stuff. And then as I'm flipping through it, you show me in preschool pictures, you know, some of my early drawings. Somewhere in there is somebody else's drawing because it doesn't look anything like mine. My drawings are all over the place. And this other one was like within the line. So that absolutely was not me. And that's basically what it was. It showed my adoptive family as well. So somebody made this for me.
Nice.
And, yeah.
So when you were adopted, were you adopted with any siblings at all? Or because you mentioned that you had a full Vietnamese brother.
Korean.
My bad, Jay.
Who was also adopted because his parents are Caucasian.
Yeah. Right. So were any of these your like half siblings or full blood siblings, or was it literally just you and they ended up adopting you with other kids?
No, that's a good question. So my brother Andy, he was adopted first, and they actually adopted him as kind of an infant, and he was born in Seoul, Korea. So he's the only sibling I have now with this adoption. But in my life book, I have two older siblings, like 1 or 2 years older. And there's a third person in one of the, like the birthday photos. Could be a little sister, could be the neighbor's kid. Not sure. So I know I at least have two older brothers that I've never seen or I haven't seen since I was like 4, and they're out there somewhere. And at some point I think I'll look for them. But to answer your question, no, that was it. Because I think with your stories, you know, you were able to at least stay in somewhat loose contact with some of the natural people. And I just didn't have that.
So I have a life book as well, Dub. I think you've seen it. And mine's a little different. For me, I have like some of the stat stuff and stuff like that. But I know the first time I saw an actual like baby picture of myself, what was that? Maybe 5 years ago? I was in my 30s. And so, and in my, like in my life book, because I know you know my story, but people new to this, episode and stuff who may not know, I was in foster care from when I was 6 till I was 10. So I was a little bit older when I was adopted. And yes, I did get to, I was adopted with my biological half brother and able to keep in contact with my other siblings. So, How does that, because I guess I can't imagine, like, I know exactly who my birth parents are. My birth father has passed away, but my biological mother's still out there, and then my siblings and cousins and all of that. How has that been for you going through life knowing that you have siblings out there or biological parents out there that you have no kind of contact, no clue where they are, what's going on, who they are? How has that affected you?
It depends on the year, to be completely honest, where you are in life, you know, because even with my adopted brother, I mean, because of the things I said earlier, you know, we've never been that close. There's only so close you can get sometimes. Yeah. Although I'm there for him whenever he needs me. But, you know, it wasn't like, so you get it, you know, adopted with your half brother. There's got to be a bond there, you know, like we're going to do this together. It's almost like something off of a TV show or something, you know, where the siblings is like, no matter what, you know, no matter what, you know, you guys are holding each other's hands and the storm's coming down, you know, no matter what. Knowing that those people are out there, it just, like I said, it depends on the year. You know, sometimes you're ready to start looking for them. And then sometimes you're like, it doesn't matter, you know, because at the end of the day, and there's going to be people who disagree with this, but I guess at the end of the day, maybe it doesn't matter. It'd be kind of cool, but, you know, I mean, I'm 45 now, and the people who adopted me raised me really well, and I can't imagine that I was an easy person to raise, until I finally matured. And I use that as something with the kids, you know, raising the kids now. It's like, man, you know, that sense of perspective is like, wow, I wasn't any better. In fact, I wish I was as smart as this person or that person. And just knowing that my siblings are out there, one day I'll look. I mean, the funny thing is, in today's world of social media, maybe I follow one of them. Hell, maybe one of them follow me.
Yeah.
But I kind of told myself a while ago that maybe I'll look harder when I don't have any of my family, or at least when my parents pass. And I lost my father recently. And, you know, like, I don't think my mother would care if I looked that hard. But again, that keeps bringing me back to, I'm not sure it really matters, but at one point it really mattered a lot, because you feel like you're alone. And we didn't have a big family, like I said before.
So growing up and you did not knowing, you know, ethnic background or anything like that, you found this community, you know, that was accepting of you when they found out they, you know, you had an Asian background or what have you. And, did you feel like you were missing something, or how did that play into how you reacted in your teen years and early adulthood? Because I know you said you had hit a rough patch for a little while. How did that attribute to that, and how did you grow out of that to still make it into being a, you know, an impactful citizen? Because you're doing a lot of great things now.
Yeah, did you just totally wild out like I did when I hit my teens and just went bonkers?
In a sense, you know, like I remember having a lot of, I remember being very angry. You know, I used to punch walls, punch doors. And, you know, once I finally moved out of my house when I was 19 years old, maybe I was 20. Because my mother used to always ask me, when are you going to move out? When are you going to move out? When are you going to move out? And I ended up moving out like a week after my brother moved out. I go, oh, in 2 weeks, right after Andy moves out. But once I moved out, they had to patch up everything in the room and stuff. So I remember being really angry. And I think with me just kind of wilding out, it's trying to find my place. And I had a lot of curiosities. I'm just a very curious person. And so it's like, all right, well, let me run with the wrong crowd until I decide I don't want to run with the wrong crowd anymore. And I think a big part of that was just, I don't want to say acceptance, because acceptance is like, well, I'm going to hang out with the gang because they accept me, they get me. But I think we all go through that in life, to where this person understands me, these people don't understand me. But even in that, I was still very independent thinking and always analyzing the situation. And so, yeah, I went through some rough patches. And once I got out of high school, I started getting in some trouble. I was really curious. So I started breaking into cars and doing all that kind of stuff just to fill time. Sneaking out and just causing mischief, nothing violent towards anybody, you know, just out of curiosity. I mean, we sold drugs out of curiosity. We sold crack out of curiosity. And, when one of my dearest friends, he was all high school football. And I said, hey, we can't do this no more. We can't do this no more because you have a future. I don't want to do this. You know, what's funny is we sold drugs to pay for things like our football jerseys for the flag football tournament. You know, it wasn't so we can get rich and buy lavish cars, because even then I knew as an 18, 19 year old, that was very unrealistic. You know, I wanted to sell drugs to afford college. How about that? Mm-hmm. I was going to go to Art Institute of Pittsburgh. I was going to buy myself a Saturn SL2. But I got caught up. Got arrested for check forgery, and went in, came out really short. So I had to sit there in front of five. Here's the thing. I went to bank after bank after bank. Five different cities, two counties, one day, 2 days. So, yeah, that eventually caught up with me.
Yeah.
I had to sit in front of five detectives from five police officers, my father, who worked for the government, and a member of the Secret Service, and tell them a story. And that's one of those things where, you know, you tell what you have to tell without telling on people. And so I think walking away from that, I got an unrealistic sense of invincibility. Like, wow, I can't be touched. I can do whatever I want. So then I got even more curious, started doing even more things. But I never did that. That's the thing. I never did that again. But I started doing other petty things, right? Because we were going to run car parts back and forth between Arkansas and Texas, where I grew up. So that was the new hustle. All right, let's build this empire. And so I got caught again. And I was in front of the same judge, and he told me, he's like, young man, if I ever see you again, you know. And so he never saw me again. Hanging out with a few of my friends, just bored, wrong parts of Dallas. One night I got my brand new car, and we drive down to Dixie Circle. So people listening to this, they may know exactly where that is, kind of a South Dallas area. At least at the time, it was really rough, and it could still be really rough. And, we pulled up to this guy's house. I had three of my boys with me in a black, brand new Acura. And we rolled up to the guy's house, and my friend, he said, roll down the window. I rolled down the window. He's like, hey, what's up? What's up, motherfucker? And then all of a sudden, from both sides, dudes ran at us with guns.
Oh.
Yeah. And I said, hey, you better say something, like, right now. And so, you know, what had happened was 15 minutes before that, somebody drove by and was shooting.
Mm.
So they got ready. And in that part of Dallas, the police don't, they're not going to come. They don't care. You know, now gunshots, you call 911, of course they're going to come. And so we had just got done picking up this stuff called wet. So we were smoking that. So we were a little, you know, paranoid already. I had one gun, my gun, and I gave it to my best friend who was with me. And I didn't have a gun. And so they're still ready for these people to come by. So every time a car would come by, people would duck and get behind stuff. I'm just like, shit. I kind of looked over at my car and I was like, man, I'm fighting fire. Like, what am I going to say if someone drives by and starts shooting and one of my friends gets shot? I get shot or my car gets shot up. So you know you're a car guy if you're thinking about your car first, right? And, you know, from that, I just remove myself. I mean, those are still my boys. I just said, I can't do that no more. We're not going down there. And I kind of broke apart from that crew, but they've always been my boys. And then I moved in with my other friend, and I straightened myself up sort of after two run-ins. It's like, you know, you keep flirting with fire, you're going to get really burned really hard. And yeah, that was it. And that's how I kind of got out of it. And, you know, it took years before I became financially responsible. It took getting married. It took a lot of things, but I never got in trouble with the law again.
Awesome. I love the story, and I love how you talk about how you grew. Do you keep in touch with those guys? Did any of them continue to stay in that more fast lifestyle, or did they start to grow out of that as well? Or, you know, and kind of hindsight being 2020 for some of the younger audience, you know, being older, it's nice to hear how their lives ended up now being back then.
You know, there's things, and just to kind of branch off of that really quick, and then I'll come back to it, because hindsight being 2020, you know, when you're 18, 19, 20 and stuff happens to you, it's always everybody else's fault. You know, why the police always looking at us, you know, never mind that we're staring them down when they drive by, you know, why this, why that? And as you get older and you get kids that start getting to those ages and they start getting into trouble, and all of a sudden you don't want your child to hang out with that person because that person's getting in trouble, you know, you get it. And at one point I was kind of that person to another group of my friends. And, you know, we actually had a long talk 6 months ago about that. And we all got on the phone because one of the guys that was with that group had committed suicide, as a lot of people had done in 2020. So we all came back together and started talking. And this whole time, you know, for a long time, I was angry at some of those guys because it's like, you guys left me. I started getting in trouble and you bailed on me. But looking back at it, you know, that was never their intention, but their parents weren't, you know, they told them they couldn't really mess around with me. And the reality is we just started going separate ways before that. Now, the other group, the guys I was in South Dallas with, everybody who matters is still with us today.
Good.
And, you know, one of my best friends, he had gotten, like, the police came to his house when something happened because he was on a list. And that's the thing. Once you start doing stuff, you're going to get on a list. So you can't get mad when they come knocking at your door. You know, that's just, you're a suspect, even if you're innocent, as long as you don't get you know, thrown down for some shit that you didn't do. But in knowing that story too, because I gave him my gun when I moved to Michigan, and he went up to Iowa. So he was still kind of messing with the wrong people. He had gone up to Iowa to do some sort of like drug deal or something, and he got robbed at gunpoint. And I was like, shit, man. You know, that could have gone really bad. That was my gun. I gave to him. You know, I always kind of think about, like, through all my curiosities and everything that I've ever planned and didn't execute, it's because I didn't want other people to get in trouble because of my vision and my ideas. And I think that's because my sense of the bond, the loyalty, and it stems a lot from, I think, my early childhood of abandonment or feeling like I was abandoned, feeling like nobody wanted me. My birth mother didn't want me. My adopted or my foster parents, they didn't want me. And none of that's true. I mean, my birth mother maybe, but the foster parents, foster is foster, right? And then growing up with parents that you feel like don't really understand you, and there's no book to this. You know, you do the best you can, like I said at the Father's Day episode last year. But you start forming these bonds, and you always feel like, or I always feel like, I need to matter. And mattering to people means I have a responsibility to make sure that the people who trust me, people who may follow, listen, you know, maybe talk to me for counsel. Like I get a lot now with other friends who are starting businesses. It's like, I have to make sure I don't steer them down the wrong path because of my own thoughts. So
a lot more conscientious now of the others around you and the impact everything that you do has, that ripple effect. So awesome, man.
Well, and that's, for me, that's super relatable too, as far as like how you mentioned it absolutely stems from your childhood. And, you know, people don't comprehend how abandonment actually works. Cause I know, I had to explain this to Dub recently.
Yeah. I still have trouble understanding it all. So,
yeah. So like I had friends who were adopted at birth, right? Which is totally different than my scenario. But people think they shouldn't, people who are like adopted at birth shouldn't have abandonment issues. And it's like, no, anytime, especially when it comes to like foster care or adoption or whatever the circumstances are where you're not being raised by the person, the people who made you, you have abandonment issues. It doesn't matter if it's your grandma or whoever raised you, right? You have that because what abandonment issues means is there's this, always in the back of your head, there's this feeling of not being wanted, like you stated, not being wanted, not being loved, not being worthy, in a sense. Like it, and it doesn't matter if it's at birth or if it's at 10 years old being adopted like myself. It doesn't matter if you go through life not being raised by the people who, like the way I always say it in my head, the people who were supposed to be the ones to raise you, who are supposed to love you unconditionally, supposed to be there for you no matter what. If they're not, if they don't want to be in your life, why would anybody else? That's the type of thoughts that we deal with. And, you know, we can go through that stuff at totally different phases in life too. You know what I mean? Where I had a lot of issues after, it was a couple years after I was adopted, through foster care in the initial couple of years of adoption. I was an angel. I was great. But those abandonment issues crept up when my adolescence hit. There's people I know that they're well into adulthood before those things start kind of messing with their head. But regardless, it's always going to be there, like I said, for anybody that is not raised by the person that is, you know, genetically supposed to be there for them. It's just the way things are.
So you went through a lot of anger, you said. What did you do to get out of that and be able to handle that? Because I've had my own anger issues in my own life. So what was your method of operation for being able to handle those bigger feelings like that of anger and frustration and what have you?
You know what? And I still get them get that sometimes, but I control it because I think I'm hard-coded as somewhat of an even-keeled person, which helps a lot. Now, I can wear my emotions on my sleeves, but it's usually not anger, which I'm glad. So if someone cuts me off in traffic, I usually just laugh because it's like, what's this fucker doing? Really? What's going on? Like what? What? You know, but if it's sports related, you know, I may jump up and just feel like this huge, like I just get super happy if like my team scores a touchdown or somebody dunks a ball that I really like. But as far as the mental stuff growing up, it's just one of those things that just clicked one day. It's like, look, man, you know, I can't get in trouble. I'm lucky that I've made it this far. At some point, you appreciate the people who helped raise you and you appreciate the circle you have. I mean, having a good circle is key. And you can have friends that run with the wrong crowd. And they can still be your friend, but you have to understand that, you know, unless you want, this is so cliche. It's not if, but when. But things become cliche for a reason, right? So if you can step up and be the leader that everyone thinks that you are, and I think that's a big part of it. It's understanding that people kind of look up to you at times. Your friends, I mean, you can kind of look around and it's not everybody's a leader, not everybody's a follower, but you could just kind of, I don't know, you pick your crew, and if people listen to you and gravitate to you and you listen to them and gravitate to them, then it should be a good thing. You know, as long as you look up and it's not necessarily where you're doing something positive, but you're not doing something wrong in life. You know, it's okay just to chill and enjoy life. And I think that was a big part of it. I think having jobs dealing with people. One thing that I told my son when he was in high school, it's like, look, you really want to learn about people, do as many jobs as you can until you have to hunker down to a career. Because customer service, I did a lot of customer service. You deal with angry customers, you deal with sad customers, you deal with happy customers. I worked at the bar as a bouncer in security, deal with customers then, worked for a repo collection company, deal with customers then. So you just basically learn to kind of analyze and understand and communicate. You learn how to communicate with so many different types of people, and then you find yourself checking yourself when you get angry. Now, I can still get really angry, but it's very rare for me to get angry. It's usually like around the house. I hate disrespectful. Blatant disrespect gets me really hot. So if the kids disrespect their mother, I get really hot. Stuff like that. But you know, you accuse me of something I didn't do, I get really mad. Especially in the workplace. It'll ruin my day. But then yeah. I'm back the next, I'm good.
Yeah.
But other than that, I'm usually just even keeled.
That's so funny that you say that about the anger thing, though, and the disrespect, because those are like the two things that will tip me off immediately. I don't know if it's the fact that my mom passed away, so I just feel like you should really appreciate your mom or what. But when there's disrespect towards mom in the house, I'm like, that's the one straw that will like send me through the roof. And so it's interesting to hear how other people deal with anger and finding out that, you know, they're pretty emotional about a lot of things, like you said, about your team scoring or what have you, or making a great play and stuff like that. So we're pretty much down the same trajectory and path when it comes to that. So pretty interesting.
You know, the ironic thing is I probably wasn't the most respectful kid growing up. You know, I had a smart mouth. Always had to get the last word in, according to my parents, just listening to them over the years. And kind of going back on your last question, as you were talking to me about disrespect and parents, one of the times that I got in trouble impacted me deeply because it impacted others. That time that I got in all that trouble when I was going from bank to bank, that cost my father a security level clearance. And a significant amount of his income, because his son got in legal trouble and he was pretty high up in the Immigration Naturalization Service Department of Justice. And he never came at me for that. He was always a really kind father. And I think about some of the times I was disrespectful to him in his face. you know, and those are the times where I'm like, man, you know, that really hurts, you know? But those are the things that help keep you grounded. Like, man, because I did this, because I was an asshole, because I thought I was taking care of me, I still ended up hurting other people, because what I was doing in the end wasn't a very good thing to do. And there's always going to be unintended, you know, consequences. And in this case, it affected other people. And so that's also one of the things that helped just kind of... Before I moved to Michigan, I remember hanging out with a guy I hung out with all the time in high school. And it was a good crew. It was a car club. And I remember he had said to me, he's like, "What's up, Jay? You're all quiet. You used to be like all loud and crazy." I was like, "I don't know." But I remember him asking me that when we were going for a cruise. And that's just because by that time I'd already done all the other stuff and started to wake up and realize that at some point I got to get myself together and I just needed to know how.
I wanted to go back because I know when I brought up the abandonment thing, I also wanted to touch on when you were talking about how important having your circle is. And especially those of us who were not raised by like biological family and things like that, I cannot stand the whole saying of blood is thicker than water and stuff like that. Like, it drives me crazy. And I think it's so important for people to understand that your circle, your family, your tight-knit group, your support system is whatever you make it. And I think that's what you've really been able to even tell within your story over the years of, you know, there's the crew that you did your shit with, that you got in trouble with, and they might be your boys and everything, but they're not the ones that are going to help you elevate yourself and get away from that. You have, you know, the other people for that, and then how it all kind of comes back around. And now you said you have, I think you said you could count over 5 people that you could for sure count on now, and probably not one is actually blood or anything, clearly, you know. And so I really think that's something important to emphasize, is there's this whole attitude out here of family before anything, or blood, you know, is thicker than water, like I said, stuff like that. And that's so false. It's so false. And the other piece with that is people need to understand that a lot of times we have a whole lot of toxicity in our families, and people feel like they need to be loyal to those people or those individuals because they're family. And that's not healthy. It's not good for you. And it's not good to have those relationships. For me, one thing I've definitely learned, and yes, I was lucky to have my brother by my side through everything. And like how you said, I mean, we were, even though we could, you know, throw blows and get at each other, no matter what, I always knew that was the person I had. He was my person. And actually that caused, even in our marriage, Doug couldn't comprehend that because he didn't go through what I'd been through and things like that. So he never could really understand that relationship. But even now, I don't even have that relationship anymore due to some things that transpired in 2020. So I've lost that relationship, but the people I do have in my life, and the family that I've built is absolutely incredible within our household. But the circle that you said you kind of incorporate into, or you become family. And I think it's just really important to highlight that that's okay, that it doesn't have to be relatives or blood or what have you. Surround yourself with the people who are going to uplift you, support you, be there for you the way that we mentally believe family should be, but it's not going to necessarily always be family.
Yeah, I want to talk to some of that a little bit, because it's the cliche, right? You can pick your friends, but you can't pick your family. And, you know, my wife, for example, she's got a huge family, and growing up, she had a small circle of friends, but, you know, her mother was her outlook on things was very toxic. And it took, you know, a few years into our marriage where she actually started being a little more independent and going out there and like making really close friendships, because like you said, I mean, family could be extremely catty, and guess what? They're always going to be there. So now you have to, you know, you're running with the people you don't even trust. With, you know, you have friends that turn on you. It's like, look, see ya. And, you know, you start going through these circle of friends in life. Again, just trying to fit in. And some of the friends that I have, it's not like I've known them forever, but it feels like forever. And it's one of those things where two of them in particular, Garfield and Tony, I decided one day that I could leave $1 million in cash on the dining room table and be gone for 3 weeks, and they wouldn't even take a quarter. Mm. And as soon as I told myself that, it's like, okay, you guys are for life. Yeah. And I have a few other friends, you know, now at the age of 45, that I can comfortably say that about too. And I'm fortunate. So through everything I've gone through, I feel like I'm fortunate as hell to have the type of relationships that I have. But at the end of the day, it's also because of me and my outlook on people and my ability to network and communicate and build relationships.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you have a huge network that you've created that, you know, just through our network and chatting on social media, I've seen and watched you grow, and just even through your podcast that I've heard you talk about. And I know, coming from a toxic family, sometimes that's all you know. So you almost crave that toxicity, and it's hard for you to let that go because the stuff can be so toxic and so brainwashing that it almost makes you feel like if you were to part with that, it's almost like losing a child in a sense. I don't know if that makes any sense, but it's almost like, you know, you've lost a child, and it's almost like you're killing off a piece of yourself if you were to let go of that piece. But where you go from there, it's uncharted waters. And when you actually get into that uncharted waters and past that fear, there's so many amazing things that can actually happen in your life and start to grow and blossom, not only within yourself, but within the people that you actually start to gravitate towards, is what I've experienced. So it's been awesome. But with your network of people you've grown, you have this huge auto community. So can you kind of tell us about One Auto and the community that you've built throughout Arizona and the globe? Because I know there's some people, even in the little Facebook groups that we've been able to communicate with that are, I mean, all over the place.
Yeah, the One Auto community, let's go back to feeling like you belong somewhere. So the One Auto community was born of, I used to rep another brand. And the guy who runs the brand, cool guy, I think, I'm not sure, I'm still not sure. But there was a few of us, we used to buy their stuff and put it on our cars and, you know, buy their clothing. And they never said thank you. And to me, that's a big deal, yeah. Especially given my past. Like, wait a minute, I'm helping you out and I can't even get a thanks. Like, because here's the thing. So that's a social media thing, but they're, you know, they're shouting out other people all the time and they're only posting certain cars. And I mean, I still have my NSX at this time. And I reached out to the guy. I said, well, at first I asked the group, you guys ever notice that whoever says thanks or gives a shout out on social media, but it does all these other people? And their response was, yeah, we noticed that too. I go, okay, well, let me talk to them. So I asked the guy straight up, I go, hey, man, this is what I noticed. And if we're not the type of cars that you want representing your brand, that's cool. Like, I'm not mad, but I don't need to be buying your stuff if, you know, if you don't appreciate that, if you don't say thanks, give shout out, because I don't have I don't know if you guys even know what I'm talking about. Somebody listening to this, you know, I don't have a Liberty Walk body kit on my car. I don't have this. I don't have that. He's like, no, I just post whatever people want me to post. I'm like, okay, that's bullshit. You know, I play the communication game long enough in life at this point. I'm a seasoned veteran, right? So I was like, okay, that's cool. I got you. So I went back and told people, I said, you know what? I'm going to stop repping it. You can rep it if you want. Totally, totally cool. But I'm going to come up with something. So I was sitting there thinking one day, I was like, you know, I got done moving from Michigan, and in Michigan, we had a really nice car community. And there wasn't a lot of us because we're in West Michigan. But when you looked at car meets, car events, cars and coffee, you look around and there's a little of everything. And you walk around and you talk to everybody. You don't just stand by your car. And I wanted to get that here in Arizona. And it's here in some capacity. It's not like I started anything that, you know, you have all these subgroups, but I just started thinking about what that felt like. It kind of felt familiar. It kind of felt like a family in a sense. And that's what it's all about. I said, you know, we're all into cars. It doesn't matter what you drive, right? We're all enthusiasts. you know, we're all the same community. We're all one. And I said, oh, shit. We're all one automotive movement.
Nice.
And so that's how I kind of hatched the One Auto Movement. And so I just reached out to a few people and said, hey, let's do this. I reached out to my, basically like my brother in Michigan, Dwayne, and another good friend of mine out here, Aaron. And the three of us started the movement. And we kind of cultivated it for a year, and we just let everybody know about it. And everybody wanted to be involved because it's like, look, man, if you don't care what other people drive, if you respect other people's cars, even if it's not your personal taste, but because somebody driving that car put their effort and their pride and their joy and their hard earned money and their own style to that car, you know, who are you to tell them that they can't do that? You know, if you can do that and respect that, then you're already one auto, because one auto is one automotive movement, one automotive community, because without one thing, the other thing wouldn't exist. And we're all kind of spinning in the same direction in order to keep this thing going, this wheel going. See what I did there? So it's like, okay, well, we're all driven by our passions in life, period. We have these podcasts, which is our passions. We're driven by our passions, right? And we're all fueled by the community. So I want my podcast to get better. You want your podcast to get better. We want our podcast. Okay. We don't want to be Joe Budden, but man, he's having success. What can we do to have that kind of success? So that drives us. And it's the same thing with cars. It's the same thing with anything you're into. And so we're all fueled by our passions, and we're all, you know, or we're all driven by our passions, and we're all fueled by the culture. And so that became kind of the motto for One Auto: driven by passion, fueled by culture. We're all enthusiasts. We're all One Auto. And then from that, you know, we do cruises and we start to do charity events. And I was like, you know, if we're going to do something, let's make it count. And I can't do it on my own. Well, Aaron dropped off after the first year. He had a lot of stuff going on. Dwayne has a lot of stuff going on in Michigan. So he eventually gave me the full keys of the kingdom. And then, you know, down here in Arizona, we just do a lot of big events with United Food Bank of Arizona. We've had three events. And we're on their wall. I've got the company logo on their wall. And to me, that's important. It's like, wow, we did that. We helped make a difference, and we couldn't have done it by ourselves. Everything we do takes a collaborative effort. Everything we do. And it's the same thing with One Auto. I mean, it's my company at the end of the day, but it's a company that belongs to the community. And that's what I tell people, because a lot of people say, hey, you know, what do I have to do to join One Auto with my car? I go, nothing. You just have to use the hashtag One Auto Movement and have respect for yourself and others. And if you want swag, you can go to oneonmovement.com and get it, but it's not required. You know, I don't require anything, just require respect. And because of that, we've just been able to do a lot of cool things. So that's the One Auto Movement. It's been April 24th of 2016 is when it was formed.
Wow. So how many people, you started it in 2016. How big has it grown, would you say?
I have no idea.
Really?
That's the thing. So I've counted, I go through all the sales and go, okay, where did this sale come from? Where did this sale come from? I think we're in 30 something states have bought something, a One Auto decal for their car, a shirt or a hat, in something like, I don't know, 14 or 15 or 16 different countries. Wow. Which is pretty cool.
That's dope.
So the idea was to just hit everybody all over the place, but you know, it's hard to explain that you don't have to join a club to be in it. Like a lot of people, especially in the car community, can't get that through their heads. It's like, okay, do I sign up? What do I got to do? Or they say, hey, give me some stuff, I'll rep it for you. But as I've said before in the past, and you guys have probably experienced with merchandise, it's like, look, man, this money comes from somewhere. Like, you're asking me to walk up to you and just hand you a $10 bill because you want to support me? How about you just buy it and then you can support it and support the cause? So I don't know. So 30-something states, maybe 16 or 17 countries. We have a lot of work to do still.
That's awesome, though. That's huge for just a few years.
Yeah, it just goes to show your network and reach that you have been able to make thus far, which I think is amazing. And now you're making me have to go buy some more gear. So I got to go check out One Auto. OneAutoMovement.com is where I can get it from.
OneAutoMovement.com.
All right. I'm going to get me a decal for my truck, which I don't even put decals on my car, but what One Auto stands for. And I love what you're doing with it. I love that you're helping the community, that it stands for respect, which is like huge for me. I'm one of those people. I don't feel like you have to give respect to get respect. You give respect and then it's earned on the other, you know. So what you do with that is awesome. Go ahead, Jay.
100%. But here's another thing, and this is something I've been trying to drive into people. It's just one auto, it's more about community than cars. And one of the things that I use a lot is the one auto lifestyle. So you can, like, I know people all across the United States, they just have their truck and they have a one auto sticker on there, and they don't, you know, they're not on the boards, they're not this, they're not that, but they believe in the community of what is one auto, because ultimately I want it to be known as just kind of another universal peace sign. You know, the clothing RVCA, almost everywhere you go, there's two or three people wearing an RVCA shirt. Mm-hmm. I can almost promise you that 90% of those people have no idea what the hell RVCA is. They just know it's something good. Right. And so that's kind of the vision that I would like to see for one auto. I'd like to just look up one day, because we used to keep track of, okay, who bought what early on, because a lot of people wanted to copy the logo because they wanted to show their support but not actually pay for it. But now it's like, I don't know. A car could drive by with one auto on. I have no idea who's driving that car. I'm just glad to see the logo on the car. And I want to see the same thing with clothing and stuff like that in the future.
Awesome. And so you said you donated donations with charity. And I was actually able to donate to one that you did over the holiday season. What are the charities that you've worked with and that you continue to work with or work with now, or that you're going to be working with in the future coming up?
Yeah, we have a really good relationship with United Food Bank of Arizona. And then my podcast main sponsor, Right Honda, Right Toyota, Jane DiMelio, she is their marketing director and she's the director of philanthropy. So a lot of the events that she does, we latch on to. And whether it's Amanda Hope Foundation, you know, or if it's the Baller Dream Foundation, you know, a lot of these foundations and charities are for things that we don't typically think about. Because we always hear of like Wounded Warrior and, you know, the Susan B. Komen and stuff like that. But there's millions of other people out there that need a lot of help. You know, Arizona Leo's Law Enforcement Officers Association, you know, whatever she's got going on, we try to latch on and be part of it. We did an event. One of my good friends, Mimi, who was like one of my generals with one auto. So to back up a second, I got tired of doing everything. So I reached out and formed a one auto council. And what the One Auto Council is it's kind of like a PTA. It's voluntary only. And what I want for the council to do is to, I don't need a bunch of yes men. I need people to say, that sounds like a good idea. That doesn't sound like a good idea. Or let's do it. Where do you need me? Or I know so-and-so and let's make this happen. And so Mimi's one of those people. And we did a huge event for mental health last year. And we brought in a company called, oh my God, the name escapes me. It's a mental health Reborn Social out of New Jersey. And we did a big event here, went to three different locations, and every location people could win raffle prizes. And the reason why we did three locations is because Phoenix is huge. And we still wanted to make a difference. A kid in the car community had just taken his life. In fact, that week, two people had taken their lives, like within 72 hours of each other, unrelated too. So that's kind of what kicked up the whole mental health awareness and the Reborn Social thing. So whenever there's an opportunity to latch onto something, no matter what it is, we try to do it. Like when we have a cruise, you know, I say everybody bring waters and we take it to the local fire station or something. You know, it doesn't even matter. We just try to make a difference. I think we got something coming up for pets, you know, pet shelters and stuff. I have Mimi and Catherine working on that.
So from that, you also branched into Hard Parking Podcast. So when did you start Hard Parking Podcast? What was the intent and how has it grown to now?
This is going to be kind of funny, but the reason probably 3 years ago now, I don't even remember, but my original co-host, Brando Barametta, he had mentioned to me at a car event that we should do a podcast. We kind of talked about it, but didn't really do anything. 2 years later, I said, hey, remember that podcast? This was in 2018. So I'm not a 2020 podcast baby. So this was in 2018 and we started doing that again. And we weren't quite sure even what we're going to call it. Izzy's trying to break in here. We weren't quite sure what we're going to call it. But really the reason why we got into it was just to talk about cars. Like the podcast has changed quite a bit if you listen to the first two or three episodes versus modern episodes. But we wanted just to get media passes and access to do cool things. So the thought was, there's a huge thing called Monterey Car Week. It's like, you know, we get good enough at this. We could set up, we could be media and have our own little table and do podcasts from these car events. Man, wouldn't that be cool? It'd be a good time. And then, you know, as he dropped off because he got way too busy. I'm giving a lot of people easy outs here, by the way. So he dropped off because he got way too busy. I decided that it was time for me to restructure the podcast because it was, you know, I had a co-host. And from that, I said, you know what, it's going to be society and culture and car cast and car stuff. And so that's when it officially became the non-automotive podcast. And I sat down and kind of wrote down my strategy of what I wanted to do. I wanted to obviously grow the podcast, and I wanted to reach. I was like, how can I reach as many people as possible without being another boring automotive car cast? I keep saying car cast. So car cast. Oh my God.
Hey, you got a new term. You coined it.
This is another podcast, which is Adam Carolla and Matt, the Motivator DeAndrea, and Bill Goldberg. Yeah. So they're usually number one or number two on the automotive podcast, but they have a lot of fun. But with my podcast, it's like, okay, I want to have fun. And my two biggest podcast influences are Dan Le Batard's show with Stu Gotts, which is a very loose sports podcast, but they have a lot of fun. So I wanted to have a lot of fun. And I'm a big fan of Adam Carolla. So I used to listen to him all the time, all day. And if, for those people that are familiar with both of those podcasts, they're going to see a lot of that influence in my podcast. Like my opening rants are very Adam Carolla-ish. And, you know, Dan Le Batard, he's, you know, he tries to bring a certain sense of perspective on things, you know, and look at both sides of the conversation. And I love doing that too. So I would say probably 60% of my podcast subscribers are there just for that portion of the podcast. Because I like cars, but cars are also very boring. And the last thing I want to do is sit there and talk about cars for an hour and a half. I don't want to do that shit because it's boring as hell sometimes. And when I have a car interview on, and it sounds good at the time, but I start looking at my clock like, okay, I'm very strategic in asking certain questions and trying to get answers that are high level enough to where people don't get completely lost. And sometimes people get lost. I think Doug, you told me you got lost a few times, you know, but I appreciate you hanging on a little bit. But even when I'm editing the podcast, I'm like, man, my God, this is boring. Jesus, let me figure out how to try to get this guest message across without completely killing everybody. You know, but I mean, it is an automotive podcast at the end of the day, so I still keep that content in for them. So that's kind of how the podcast has kind of evolved since late 2018 to where it is now, where now I have a title sponsor, which is Wright Honda out of Scottsdale, Arizona. And they actually approached me in doing charity work with them at some point. And, hey, we want to be part of the podcast. Nice. And then some of the other sponsors that I have are people that I've had relationships with in some way or shape over the past, but I still, you know, it's one of those things where I decided to take my existing social media following and say, okay, how can I leverage these connections? How can I leverage this crowd to help me with the podcast? And even in the beginning, people weren't really jumping on board because, as you guys probably found out, it's like, you're always going to be the subject matter expert in whatever field people know you in first. So when you start branching off to something different, they're familiar with you. They don't know you know anything about podcasting. You know, they don't know you know anything about credit. They don't know anything you know about anything about whatever else. So it's almost like you have to start over and not only earn their trust, but just, you know, it's like selling candy bars, right? Like family's going to buy candy bars. Co-workers, your next door neighbor, you get two or three streets down, they don't care about you. They're going to buy that candy bar if they feel like buying the candy bar. And I think podcasts, anything else you do in business and networking is the same way. So we get upset because, okay, our family's not supporting us. Our friends aren't supporting us. Like I have my inner circle, like six or seven people, I think like two might listen to the podcast. And the other four are like, hey man, how's that podcast going? Oh man, I was listening to Joe Rogan the other day, man. It's like, oh man, come on, dog. Like, you can't hit the subscribe button just for me. But you have to earn that. So, you know, first when I was doing the podcast, it's the same thing with all the sponsors. Like, I hit up 20, 30 people that I already had relationships with. And like two were like, sure, I'll do it because it's you. But then the next time around, they're like, hey, you're still doing that? It sounds great. I've been listening. You really take your craft serious. You have a good, you know, you have good delivery. You have good topics. I want to be involved. And so I would say that that transcends to not just podcasting for those podcasters listening, but anything you're doing in life, any kind of business, any sort of side hustle. You know, people are always watching when you think, even when you think they're not, and you have to show them. Show them you're committed. Show them you mean it. And if no one steps up to the plate, they don't step up to the plate because it's still got to be important to you. And if you're just chasing dollars at the end of the day behind your hobby, then, you know, maybe you should reevaluate. Like, how many of us are like, okay, I just did three episodes. Where are the money at? Where are the sponsors at? It's like, no, that's not what, that's not why you do this.
Yeah, we got to enjoy it. So,
well, and I feel like I know with the stuff that we've gotten into and everything else, I'm a firm believer in planting the seeds. And like you said, you have to earn it. As people see that you're serious, and especially as people see, like you said, it's not about the money. It's about your passion. And like with what we do, we enjoy helping people. And so to every time we see like one of our clients have success or one of our people we're working with through our advocacy work or what have you get a win. You know what I mean? That's what feels good to us. It's like at the end of the day, getting paid on it. Of course, we all have to live and make a living, but that's not, you know, what fills us up. What fills us up is those, you know, depending on what you're doing, but those wins for others.
Feels good.
Yeah.
I tell people, because my wife's like, oh, you want to be the center of attention? I said, I don't, but I want to matter. You know, I want to be impactful and help.
Yeah.
So I want to be the person standing next to or on the side of the stage while somebody else wins an award because I know that I helped them get there.
Yes.
To me, that's important. Exactly. You know, I don't want to be the one walking up there accepting the award because now I'm the center of attention and that makes me uneasy. It's like when I go to car shows and the car people tell you, like, people know who I am, and I stop and talk to people here and there, but man, I sometimes park my car and I get out of that thing as fast as I can and get the hell away from the car. Yeah. And I find my friends and we just walk around and just kind of talk, you know, because it's like, I'm not Dom, you know, Toretto, just standing there with my arms open. This is Brazil. You know, that's not me.
Awesome.
That's so funny because I'm the exact same way. I keep telling people, I'm like, no, like even with this, it was very hard for me to even get behind a microphone, even though there's no camera there. Because I'm like, no, I'm that behind the scenes. Like, I'll do whatever it takes to get you where you want to, you know, are going. And that's what makes me happy. But being the center of attention and stuff, I'm the exact same way. I'm like, no, let me go back here in the shadows.
It's like people who need, you want to get in a position where those who need to know, know.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I love it.
Trying to wrap it up here for you because I know we've talked about a lot today. But before we get you out of here, we cannot leave without talking about your car. So you're part of the car community. This is one thing that you've branded yourself on. We talked about One Auto, Hard Parking Podcast, which is awesome and amazing, and everything else. But you're always trying to hop out of that car that you like to talk about on the podcast. So can you let everybody know what car you're talking about and what interests you so much about that vehicle?
You know, I don't think I talk about the car that much on the
podcast. Oh, you talk about the car, Jay. Not that much, though. I just like to mess with you.
But like the early episodes, that was like part of it, just giving an update on it. But I try not to even talk about that much, but I have a 1997 Acura NSX, Berlina Black. And for those who are watching this video, if this video ever births on the YouTube, there's a photo of it right behind me when it was wrapped. And that was my Robotech Macross wrap. So people who listen to this may actually know the car because of that. Some people may not, but when I was in high school, I saw the NSX for the first time, and it just felt like it would be mine one day. And then once I sat in one, it just further reinforced the fact that one day I would have one. Super long story short, 20 years later, I finally got one. And so I've had it for 9 years now, and I've done so much to it. I've done so much with it to the point that like it's somebody told me on a trip recently to California, a car trip. He's like, man, you gotta, cause I don't have the rap on there anymore. He's like, man, you gotta put that rap on there, man. You gotta put the rap on there. There's a brother. Yeah, man, you gotta put that rap on there. Look, man, like nobody knew who you were before the rap. And it's like, you know what? Don't tell me that, man. Don't do that. Cause I've always been somebody. Now there's more people who know the car, but don't say you know me because of the car. So that's why my Instagram NA2NSX is growing to over 15,000 followers. It's because of the car. It sure as hell ain't for because of me. But in that, like I said, you know, a little while ago, you leverage those connections. You leverage, you know, the networking that you've done. Because some of the sponsors I have now, I mean, I've been building those relationships for years. You know, when I finally got into SEMA, which is, you know, like the world's biggest automotive aftermarket show in Vegas, you know, some of my sponsors I had known for a while, and they still were like, eh. So I would see them once or twice a year for 2 or 3 years. And then finally it's like, okay, you know, but you have to foster those relationships and you have to be genuine about it too, because people can see the bullshit. That's the car. It's turboed. It's pretty fast. And it's a lot of fun.
So that's the car we were referring to, but you also have a daily driver and some other cars. What are some of the favorite cars you've had thus far?
So, you know, what's funny, and it's sad in a sense. Okay. So I want you to be sad with me. For as big of a car person as I am, like I've had this car for 9 years. I've had my Infiniti FX 35 Sport since like 2012. It's a 2007. And my wife has a 2011 Audi. And because I don't have a spouse that understands or appreciates her husband's passion for his craft, his community of cars. Like I would love to have a different car every once in a while. Like I don't have to buy a brand new car, but when you grow up liking cars and you're looking at car magazines, some cars you're going to have are going to be a lot cooler than others, but you still want that experience. And in a funny way, because of my day job as a healthcare IT consultant, I miss renting a car every week because that means I had a new car every week and it didn't have to be anything super cool. It was just a different car and a different experience. You know, so I mean, my NSX is obviously going to be the best car I've ever had, but I've had a couple old Acura Integra GSRs. I bought a brand new one and I'm showing my age here in 1998. And then I totaled it. And then I got a brand new 1999. And then I put a turbo on it and I blew the motor. One of the favorite cars that I had was, I think it was like a 91 Civic. It was a piece of shit. I bought it for my friend Dwayne because the motor was blown in my Integra. It was all riced out, man. It was completely hollowed out. I put a straight pipe on it, so it was super loud. The windshield wiper wouldn't work. The heater didn't really work. I got a body kit for it, and I was too impatient to find a body kit shop, so I literally took drywall screws and riveted it into the side of the car.
You were that guy, huh?
I was that guy. Yeah, but I had cool wheels. I had wheels for my Integra. And then I had a blue hood because it came from like a, I think they come brand new blue and then you have to paint them. But I had so much fun in that car. And I did pretty good socially with that car, interestingly enough. Maybe people just felt bad for me. Maybe girls felt bad. Oh, this poor guy driving this piece of shit. I should, what are you doing? Like, you know? But driving through the icy roads of Michigan, the car was so light, I would just, you turn before the turn, it's almost like a boat and then just fly down streets. And that car was a lot of fun, but I don't think anything, well, I know nothing up to this point has been as fun as my current NSX.
Sweet. Well, we appreciate you hopping on here, sharing your backstory, Jay, talking about the One Auto Movement, which everybody needs to join, and also talking about Hard Parking Podcast, which we love, tune in quite a bit. I love your segments, and yes, we love the rant that you do, my friend. So let us know, number one, where can we find you on social media for sure?
So one of the things I've been pushing hard is the Facebook group, Hard Parking Violations. And that, don't think it's just a car thing. I like to have anything in there, and I wish more people would post in there. So go to Facebook, Hard Parking Violations. The podcast, obviously, is Hard Parking Podcast, available pretty much anywhere you would normally get your podcast. on Instagram, NA2NSX. So NA2, which is the engine code for my car. NSX is what I drive. If you want the more fun, less car stuff, you can go to J Travels, which is JHAE_travels. And that's JHAE_travels, also on Instagram. And yeah, I mean, Jay Finning on Facebook, but those are the biggest ones that I do. I mean, I'm Jay Finning on Twitter and I'm Jay Finning on Clubhouse. Although I haven't really got too much in a Clubhouse, and Twitter is Twitter.
And that's Finning with a P.
P-H-E.
No, what is it? Isn't it P-F?
It's P-F, yes.
Yeah, P-F. Get out of here.
P is in pterodactyl.
Awesome, Jay. And if they want to get some One Auto gear, where do they need to go? One more time.
.com. And also you can follow One Auto on, thank you for that, on Instagram, OneAuto_movement. Otherwise, OneAutoMovement.com. And the Hard Parking Podcast website is going to be coming up soon. But for now, it's just Instagram and whatnot.
Awesome, man. Appreciate you having you on. Leslie has her questions that I know she's dying to ask you over here.
Just my ending question. I got to ask everybody, if they take one thing from this episode, from what you had to say about, I mean, we went all over. We talked about a whole lot. What would you want them to take away from this experience?
Don't judge a book by its cover. Because when people see, I'm going to plug the podcast here. When people see Hard Parking Podcast, they automatically think cars. And I understand that. But the podcast, I urge you to check it out because it's so much more than cars. It's an extension of me. And Dub and Les will agree to that because, you know, when I'm telling stories about my father or I'm telling stories about stuff that drives us crazy when you're out and about, the stuff that drives me crazy drives everybody else crazy. So if nothing else, it's extremely relatable, and I'm an extremely relatable person. So that's what I would like people to take away. And you can become something if you want to be. You know, I don't know where my ceiling is, but I'm still reaching for it.
I love it. I just
made that up.
I love it. And yes, you guys, Jay is absolutely right about his podcast. I'm going to give it a plug as well because it's – especially being a, you know, the whole stereotypes of females and everything else, you might not look at it thinking it's car guy junk or whatever. No, it's not at all. And I mean, just listen to the man's voice, y'all. Right there, that should make you want to just go check it out. But no, he has some really dope combos and stuff on there. Just go check it out and give it a chance.
That's Hard Parking Podcast with Jay Travels.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Appreciate you, Jay.
Thank you, Jay.